Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is March 11th, 311?
Yes.
Yep.
311. Inka's, I think she's coming. She's coming on soon. So y'all will hear her pop in shortly. And right as the show was starting, we were talking about rich people problems.
It's privileged Negro issues.
Frequent traveler problems.
So I was saying that, well, first of all, since the last time we taped, did we tape last Wednesday?
Yeah, we taped last week.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I've had my first COVID shot. Y'all clap for me.
Oh.
So I'll be fully vaccinated.
Where'd you go?
To the Armory.
They're still doing it at the Armory. Okay.
Yeah, New York opened it up to people under 65 with, what do you call it, comorbidities. I don't know how you say that. They might have never heard that word before.
Did they check your paperwork or you just let you go?
They ain't asked for nothing. But also, I mean, I do have asthma, but I didn't bring anything that says I have asthma. I'm technically, I didn't cheat, quote unquote. Although,
I don't think they're asking people for shit, because I listened to Kelly's podcast. I listened to KMGZ's podcast today. Yeah. And she went out. She said, I don't know what she said.
Well, she got the J&J joint.
She went to Javits. And she said they didn't check her shit either.
They haven't. And I think also because distribution, and I think this is in every state, the distribution process has just been really poor. And there are locations that are ending up with leftover doses at the end of the
exactly.
day.
Exactly. So they need to get rid of the shit, you know?
Yeah, I heard that at the Armory, even if you didn't have an appointment, they weren't turning you away.
Yeah, I'm going to go over there tomorrow.
And it was really quick. Like, it wasn't crowded.
That's what she said.
The line was expedited. Like, it was really efficient and really quick. And I got my joint. And I only freaked out a little bit. And I didn't start panicking.
Oh, you didn't swing on nobody?
Well, I'm not that. I just be, like, breathing all crazy. Sometimes I've been known to cry. But... I was checking in with myself because I was good before I left the house, but I did use a numbing cream and a numbing spray, and I took pain relievers. Mm-hmm. And I want to say at this point, this is all psychosomatic, and I know it's all psychosomatic because shots don't actually hurt that bad. It's just something about the anticipation
of them picking your skin.
Of the pain, right? Mm-hmm. It's not logical. It is, which is why phobias aren't necessarily logical. Hold on, this is Inka coming in. But so I thought I was good, but then because you go in, there's like a few different checkpoints where people check your appointment or whatever. Then you sit down with a check-in person. Hey, Inka, and you actually like they take your paperwork and your ID. So when I got there, I started getting a little tight of breath. Heart started racing a little. And then as I walked to the nurse, like I was getting a little more and more anxious. And once I sat down next to her, I was having to like take breath. And I told her, I was like, I have a little bit of a thing. Mm. And she was very sweet. Like she was asking questions. And she was trying to distract me.
Yeah.
And I told her, I was like, I'm not looking at you. I'm not trying to be rude. I just can't. I said, you can't let me see the needle. So I had to bounce my leg a little bit and take deep breaths. But I did good for me.
Wait, what did you get? You got the Johnson & Johnson?
I got Pfizer.
You got to go get a second.
Yeah, I got to go get a second one.
Okay.
I will say, later in the day and the next day, my arm was sore. So I was like lifting it above my head and moving it around and do stuff like that. And a couple of days
ago. You was doing the hokey pokey?
Yeah, all that. A couple of days ago, I had a little bit of congestion, which I'm just getting rid of. And it was weird because it's not all the way in my chest. It's kind of in my lungs.
Well, that's what Kelly said. Kelly said that it made her feel like a kind of like the early stages of maybe a cold coming on.
Yeah,
it doesn't turn into a cold, but it gives you that early.
It felt like, you know how when you have post-nasal drip and you have phlegm somewhere and you can't clear it?
Mm.
It felt like that. Like I said, it felt like it was like in here, which is weird, right? And no matter what I took, it didn't seem to help. And I couldn't like cough it out.
Yeah,
I couldn't,
it just had to go away.
So, but I'm not, that started on Sunday, but I wasn't sure. It could have been three things. It could have been the vaccine. It could have been I have a crack in one of my window was cracked. So it could have been cold air. Or I was in a zip car on Saturday most of the day, and whoever was in the zip car, they turned it in like 2 hours before me, hot box the car to the extent that with weed. That by the time I got out of the car, I was high.
Oh, wow.
So I also don't know. No, I didn't even know it was scientifically possible. Inca made a face. I didn't know it was scientifically possible to get a contact after the person who was smoking left.
They're smoking like crazy.
Was actually high by the time I got out.
Did you stop and go get some chips or some Nalays or something?
I tried. So I hadn't really eaten all day.
Nigga, not the bodega asking for Boston baked beans.
Boston and a great knee high.
Right before I took the car back, I drove past the drive-through McDonald's that's on, what's that on? Not Lenox. It's on, well, it's in Harlem. Anyway, there's a drive-thru McDonald's.
Oh, the one on 7th.
Yeah, the one on 7th. Mm. So I went through, and I got me a filet of fish and some fries.
Yeah, well, you
but then I had to drop the car off. Actually, I probably by you, Jeffrey, up on Cabrini. So,
oh, yeah, yeah.
So I drove up, and I'm thinking to myself, at this point, I'm fighting the high because I'm fucking driving, and it's getting dark. And I'm like, I can't believe I'm fucking high in this car. Like, that doesn't make any sense. So I'm eating the fries, whatever. I get out the car. Filet of fish comes in a box. I get out the car. I drop the McDonald's bag. The box falls out the bag, pops open. The sandwich hops out the box, lands right in front of the box. The box closes back shut. And I just sat there and stared at it for like a
few minutes. It wasn't meant to be.
I was really sad.
You'll be out.
I was really, really sad. Anyway, so
The whole thing?
I was really doing the math, like, okay, if I grab it,
I'm a legendary fat nigga when it comes to that sort of shit.
Should have took the bottom butt off because only the butt, like it literally just like, it was like it committed suicide. It hopped out the box. And I was really like, fuck, it's a garage floor. That's really nasty.
It wasn't meant to be. It's better that you didn't eat it.
But anyway, so we were talking, so I just wanted to get to say I got my shot and then so I'm saying all that to say I might have been sick because of that. But anyway, moving on. We were talking about travel. I was just talking about my vaccine.
Hi, Anka.
Hi, hey, everybody.
Maybe you can relate this, maybe you can't. My dilemma right now is that I have platinum status. I think we've talked about this before. I have platinum status on Delta.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us a pass last year. Like, we know ain't none of y'all niggas going nowhere. We're going to hold your status over. I can't get that again this year. So I'm trying to figure out what the fuck I'm supposed to do about keeping my status because I cannot go back to traveling.
You're going to catch an L, son. You're not going to keep your status. You're not going to keep your status. It's over.
I have to figure it out.
You got two things to do. You got two options that I can figure out.
I really can't
Call Delta and yell and scream.
And beg.
Yell and scream. Call Delta and pay. Or catch that L. So those are your three options. I don't know what to tell you.
I can't relate to this at all. I don't know.
You know, Inka got the airport socks and all that shit. She don't fuck around.
Oh God,
that shit gonna be on my tombstone because of you.
But you were saying, Jeff, that you have clear.
I had it.
I have pre-check. I have clear. Then I have set. Like I have everything possible to make this shit.
See, the only thing I miss out, and I guess I could get this through my Amex. I ain't even think about it, is the lounge thing.
Why you can do that through your Amex?
Because you know what? I very rare, that's just a delay or something like that. I really don't go to the airport that early. So I get to the airport, and by the time I get through whatever, it's pretty much time to get on the plane. I don't do the shit around.
I used to use it on the other side. Like if I went to LA, I might use it to like go freshen up, change clothes.
Oh, yeah.
Do something like that. Or, you know, if I needed to take a call real quick, I would use it to go to the bathroom instead of going to like the regular bathroom.
I'll be all right. I'll be sitting in a little chair next to Granny, you know what I'm saying? Listen to my iPod. You know, shit. You know,
I mean, Sean, what about you? Because I'm thinking like
I know, bro got all that shit. He got
yeah, it. I do. I ain't waiting on no lines, bro. If it's a price for me to pay to skip the line, I'm paying that price. Yeah. It really ain't an option for me. So I got global entry. So with your global entry, you get your automatic TSA pre-check.
Right.
You get your known traveler number. That is a saving grace, particularly.
You had told me to get this a while ago.
I'm telling you, bro. Now, it will still work at some of your larger airports like Atlanta and LAX, but that shit really comes in handy at maybe like a smaller airport or more from the time I get to dropped off at an airport like West Palm Beach, it's literally like, it's not even 10 minutes from when I get out of the car till I'm at the gate. Like, that's how fast I breeze through.
Wow. Yep. Wow.
You know what I'm saying? And then when you come back into the country on your global entry, like, no one wants to stand on that long-ass line, bro.
Nobody.
You know what I'm saying? You go in, you punch your shit in, you good to go. I signed up all the kids. Every passport, the passport card, you're getting all that shit, bro. Let me get all of that.
Last time I went to Toronto, which was, it was like February of last year. Yo, it took the custom shit was, and it was early. It was like 6 a.m. It took so long that they literally had, I think I mentioned this on the show. They had to hold the plane because that many people were stuck in that line.
Canada's the worst place to get into.
Toronto was bonkers. Are you serious?
And they're doing that. They were doing that on purpose. They do that on purpose. They want to make it incredibly uncomfortable, and they want to see who's going to flinch.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Who's going to front? You know. So anyway,
drive to the border. Some bullshit. It takes an hour and a half in the car.
They fucking around.
So when y'all hear about me going to Bali, it's so I can keep my...
You give me your stats.
I'm trying to figure it out because...
You'll be all right. You'll
my
be all
right. Status, no, I won't. No,
no. When's the next time you flying?
I don't know, but I'm about to figure it out. Probably April. I want to go somewhere for my birthday because I'll be vaccinated. But I'm saying, like, my status is based on the fact that I would be bouncing to L.A. at least once a month. Clearly, I'm not doing that shit anymore. I got planned, like, 2 transcontinental trips. Like, it can't just be Europe, because that ain't shit. Like, so if anybody has any ideas...
Go to Africa.
Why not just pay
more
for the status?
Yeah, you could pay for the status. It might even be cheaper.
Call Delta.
It might be cheaper. I'll look at that.
Yeah, you ain't got to fly to Bali. Just pay.
I'm not going to also go to Bali.
Well, go out there and fuck around and get stuck
like,
with old
like
girls.
Like them gals.
Bali's open, too, I think.
End up, what's that show I used to watch?
Be in a group chat.
Locked Up Abroad.
Locked Up Abroad.
I'm not going to go to Bali and do, y'all know me. I'm not going to lounge around the house and buy a bunch of fucking furniture. Mm-hmm. That's
somebody,
all I'm
somebody gonna stick some heroin in your knapsack. So anyway.
My ass ain't going to do nothing there but come back with a whole bunch of fucking Balinesian furniture that I don't have no places to put. Be talking about rugs and shit. That's the same thing I did in Morocco. I'm going to Bali though. I think that's the point.
All right, let's just jump into it. Couple quick shout outs. Musically, you know, the guy, all three, none of you niggas care about except me. Drake dropped a little EP, Scary Hours, which is now.
I liked it. EP.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he does. This is the second time he's done. So this is like a thing now where he drops the Scary Hours. This is Scary Hours 2 before he's, you know, dropping his new project, which I think is coming April, May. got a couple. I like 2 out of 3. The Lil Baby record is good. I like the record with him and Ross. He's going super ham on that. And I like the is it What's Up? What's Happening with the first with the video. And then we got the single from Silk Sonic. It's Silk Sonic, right?
Yes. Yeah,
Silk Sonic.
I think we talked about this last week, yeah, but I just want to mention it again. It's they come with the album.
We did it because it dropped on Friday. I love it.
Oh, that's right. We talked about
it. I love
it. We mentioned that they were doing a collaboration, but they hadn't.
Yeah, but it hadn't come out yet. Yeah, so they Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak, which is actually like literally the perfect pairing. They're both like great drummers.
Fucking perfect.
But Anderson is like a stellar drummer. He's like a top tier drummer, and Bruno ain't that far behind him. They're both like multiple musicians, multiple instrumentists. They both rap, they both sing, they both cool. I think they both be on that cocaine, allegedly. And
they'll be on some.
And they do two dope niggas. They both give great live shows. And they paired up to do this project called Silk Sonic. That I don't know when it's coming out, but they definitely, dropping, I think, springtime.
It's going to be soon.
Yeah, it's going to be soon.
They got images out and all that.
Yeah, they got images.
Long windows no more for sure.
Yeah,
like
yeah. And, I know there's supposed to be no live concerts this year, but whenever the live shows kick back in, that's when
I'm going.
Live shows is kicking back in this year.
Yeah. Are they starting in? Good. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'll see them niggas this year then, because I want to see that.
I hope y'all know Bruno was supposed to be one of the headliners at Essence last year.
Oh man,
so mad COVID.
Now imagine if we get Essence this year with imagine we get Essence with both of these niggas.
Essence ain't coming back this year.
I know
Essence can't do it, but you're gonna get smaller venues. So those guys, really, what they should be thinking about is how they're going to charge a premium to weed people out and go to smaller House of Blues-ish type venues. Those 2,000 seat. Yeah. Spaces, do
Fox Theater,
VIP. Yeah, that's what they need to be focused.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, and I think I saw that they're gonna be performing on the Grammys. I think I saw that. Don't quote me, but I believe I saw that they're gonna be one of the Grammy performers.
I'm wholly uninterested in the Grammys this year.
But if they perform, I'm popping for them. But anyway, I just wanted to get them some love. And there's so much to talk about, man.
I want to shout myself out because Jeffrey's gonna hate, but I launched the IG for my dollhouse, and y'all. And
yo, what's going with the fucking with the coconut cake, bro? Yo, I wanted a slice of coconut cake.
That coconut cake is my favorite thing.
I was like, yo, I really want a slice of pineapple coconut cake right now.
Mom almost ain't get that cake because after I made it, I was like, this shit looks amazing. I just kept staring.
You got an IG for your dollhouse?
Yes. And people it's been flame. Look, Ava's been on it, Sean's been on it. You the only hater that ain't looked at it.
Listen, Nye is moving into the dollhouse. There is a tiny ladder and moving boxes.
And you are so excited.
Tiny little paint. Like, it is so
and mad people. So if y'all follow me on regular IG, which is Naima Graham, I've put a couple of posts up there that point to the dollhouse IG. But I'm telling you, Jeffrey, people are into it. Right.
I'm going to look at it.
I even have one set up where I have like, one of my friend Pam, gave me a tiny turntable as a housewarming gift with a bunch of vinyl. And I even have
a record room. It's so amazing.
All right. I'm going to look at it. Piece of the
dollhouse. I'm pressed.
I'm
going to
look at
a
piece of the dollhouse. any shout outs before we start? Inca, because I know you always got one.
Shout out to The Sopranos. Listen.
Oh boy, this nigga.
Here we go.
She about to do a Sean rant right now.
Y'all know I watched this show in the last month or so. Like, we binged it from the beginning. I'd never seen it before. I saw like a piece of an episode a long time ago.
10 years.
And I'm very angry at the last episode of The Sopranos. Very like irrationally angry. I couldn't even go to sleep.
Was about to kick the TV in.
I was pissed. The final episode did not do justice to the incredible show that was. That was an excellent show. Every episode, character arc.
It's a classic.
The writers were genius in making you root for all of these villains in every single episode because they were all terrible people.
All of them.
And then the end was, there was just no satisfaction. I didn't give a fuck about Meadow parking that car and scraping the rims up for seven minutes of the episode. I didn't give a fuck that they were going to that diner. I didn't care about any of the stuff. Like, we had to watch Phil Leotardo's head get run over by a car.
Yeah.
We had to watch him, like, Chris Moltisanti gasp for breath and breathe his own blood in and watch him die with Tony's one hand. We had to watch Big Pussy Bombincero's big ass get rolled into the Atlantic Ocean. But we don't even get, like, a gunshot. Like, a Foley artist couldn't come in and shoot Tony, like, make a sound that Tony was dying. It's just gonna fade to black like my cable is out. I'm pissed.
Yeah, you missed that thing because you're 10 years late. But when that ending happened,
I'm on time, nigga.
When that happened, a lot of cable companies got bombarded because everybody thought their cable went out. That was like a thing.
They thought the cable cut.
Yeah, that was like a thing. Everybody was like, people calling the cable.
I wonder if your, because everybody, most people were angry. In the real time, but I'm wondering if your irrational anger is also a part of the culture of binging, because we didn't have that as a part of the binge.
True.
Right, there was a slow roll, and so you kind of begin to make peace with what's going to happen to characters because you have that week of anticipation. You would have, you know, and it's not.
And everybody's talking about it, you know.
Yeah, like
I'm fine with everybody dying because I knew everybody died, right?
Yeah,
I knew that is a very straightforward show. Well, there was a Hollywood culture around it. You know what I'm saying? Like everybody needed to die died.
Okay,
I think how they ended, I think had we seen Tony get shot, people would have been mad. Maybe not as mad. Had Tony survived, some people would have said it was too neat. I think that, was it a cheat? Yes, but not that I'm a script writer by any means, but what I can tell you is that even for the most excellent writer, ending a story is the hardest part. It's the hardest part. To come to satisfaction.
This is why my anger is irrational, because I don't know another way that I would have been satisfied with the end of the show.
Right.
But I think it was... I actually thought it was, for me, and I think that this is also a part of the viewing experience, for me, it was a perfect ending, because
you should make up your own ending, really.
And that's what I was going to say. So for me, I don't think Tony died. I think he went on and continued to live, and he lived with that heaviness and fear of your shit being able to go at any second.
Looking over his shoulder.
You can't even have dinner with your family. You never know.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what happened. I do.
Yes. Yeah,
I'm so fucking pissed.
Well, go ahead, Sean. Yes. Sorry.
But I'm saying also, here's the myth, right? Is that these gangsters all die violent deaths. They do not. Mm-mm. Many of those guys live well into their 70s and 80s and die from shit like liver disease and heart disease.
Like Uncle June.
Yes, they die of old age. They don't always die in these sort of grandiose fashions, particularly when you make it to a certain level in that world and in that space. So that's what I took from it. But I mean, I totally was like, damn, I wanted to bang out. I wanted to bang out in the diner too, nigga. Like,
well, also, I've noticed that.
I needed something.
People really don't like it when they're not definitively told what happens, right?
What happens,
I think some writers like to leave it, and I can't off the top of my head think of it, but there's another show that I was thinking about that isn't as old as, that was popular that left a similarly kind of open-ended ending, or maybe it was a movie. I can't think of what it is. It's in the back of my mind. I can't grasp it, but people being upset that it was left open to your interpretation. And I think sometimes that's why writers do it, is because even they don't necessarily want to put a period at the end of the character's story. So it's like, you can decide what you think happened after all this shit. You know,
frankly, on a business end, it is you do not want to kill an IP, right?
Yeah.
The Sopranos IP is Tony. He didn't have, you know, his AJ was not under the ranks of him and coming up. So you still wanted to have the ability to do a movie or a spinoff or, you know, something else or revisit the series. You just never knew at that point. So
yeah,
I think that played a role.
I know what they're supposed to be doing, like a prequel now with them young. And that's supposed to be coming on, I think, later this year or next year. So it'll be like Tony and them when they first started. But anyway, so yeah, on to the next. I'm gonna give you my foreign film review of the week. This shit hot though. I told brother watch. It's called Wolf Brigade. It actually was an anime, another Asian joint, another Korean. I think it's Korean or Japanese, one of the two. This shit hot though. It's mad violent, mad action. It's about this. It is Korean. It's about in the future North Korea and South Korea merge. But there's obviously a lot of issues with that. And they developed this crew called the Wolf Brigade, who like are these super killer dudes with these crazy, you know, outfits or whatever. But that shit hot. You should definitely watch Wolf Brigade on Netflix. For some fun shit, watch another one on Netflix called Major Look. And that is about the art world. And it's about
the counterfeiting.
Your forgeries in the art world. It's really interesting because this shit goes on like a lot, like a lot where people are buying paintings that they think are real and they find out later on that they're not, but they spent millions of dollars. And so this is about in New York, a woman who was an art dealer and there was kind of like, what did she know? Did she not know? And she was selling paintings. And one of the guys that she sold paintings to is this guy named Domenico Desolé. Now, Domenico Desolé, for those who don't know, is the guy that is a partner of, he's Tom Ford's partner. Obviously Tom Ford closed. He was at Gucci with Tom Ford. They ran that together and then they left Gucci and started his own line, which obviously is still big and going now. So this dude got like wow paper. Like he's on the board of Sotheby's and da 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 da. And they got him. So it's very interesting. Is that on Netflix too? I think so. Yeah, so watch Major Look. And then the third one is called Murder Among Mormons.
Oh, I meant to talk about that last week. That shit is crazy.
Crazy.
I started it and fell asleep.
It's good.
And I'm actually
good.
Mad because the first couple of episodes, I was like, I knew it. These motherfuckers. And I'm sorry, like, I doubt we have any Mormons.
You're calling them Mormons, motherfuckers.
I doubt we have any Mormons.
You curse the whole Mormon.
I know. I doubt Mormon we have any Mormons that listen to the show, but I have fundamental issues with the Church of Latter-day Saints. Fundamental. With Jehovah's Witnesses. Like, everything y'all fucking believe is ridiculous.
Well,
I'm saying that as somebody who believes died.
Exactly. This is where I was going to go with this. And I don't know how far we want to go into this conversation. And if somebody might get struck down by lightning. You see, brother left. So, very short. The Church of Latter-day Saints, right? Which is Mormonism. The story goes, there's a guy named Joseph Smith who was like a frontiersman type of guy, right? And he was frontiering one day and a being... He was in the woods or some shoot up in the woods in the mountains. And there's a being that came down called Morimi. Morimi or something like that, came down to him and basically handed him this information and said, you are going to start this church and blah, 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 blah. And he started writing.
It's like their version of Moses in the tablet.
Kind of, yeah. And he started writing on these writings. And then Joseph Smith, you know, got a few other people and they started this church, which has become this massive, you know, very wealthy church. Mostly white people. There's a few niggas in there now, but they had banned niggas for years because according to their version of the Bible, niggas were supposed to be slaves and were not supposed to be in the church. But
the darker skin was a curse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Some of them have more, you know, modified that, in my opinion, basically because of sports. Because big BYU is a huge university and need to have let black people in so they could compete. So they kind of, you know, modified that and, you know, whatever. But my point to all that was, as quote, air quotes, crazy as that story is that story any crazier? than Moses going up to the mountain or Muhammad crazy. Or like they're all crazy stories. No, they're all crazy stories.
It's not that it's any crazier. Here's my thing with the Church of Latter-day Saints. It isn't so much the origin story with John Smith. It is, okay.
Joseph Smith.
Joseph Smith. Mm-hmm. Okay, Christianity, granted, like translated, the Catholic Church translated a version of all the texts and edited it into our version of the Bible. I understand that, right?
Yes.
But no matter what translation of the Bible you read, if you are in most denominations of Christianity, no matter what translation of the Bible you read, it's pretty much interchangeable, except for fundamentalists like Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses and like those,
and like the ones with the beard and the mustache, Amish
and the Amish
and the Mennonites.
They have a very specific text that only their church uses, right? And if you question it, if you read anything else, if you bring up anything else, if you challenge any of the ideals of the church, you are excommunicated, not only from the church, but from your entire family, everything, right? And that level of extremism, to me, is a problem. And I have a friend who is a Jehovah's Witness. He was talking to me about some of the stuff in their version of the Bible, and I was like, my man, that shit is absolutely 100% wrong. And my thing is, like, any church that tells you you can't even question the church,
but who are we to say?
How do you know why you believe what you believe if you can't ask questions?
Because I watched something else that was really interesting a couple of days ago in regards to this. Shut up, Inca. It was a documentary about the Mennonites. Now, Mennonites are a very extreme version. I don't even want to call it extreme version of Amish. They're definitely different. So they are all based in, their religion is based in Germany. Now, most of them have left Germany and spread now into like Central and South America. That's where they are mostly based. They're not many of them based in the States. They're like in Peru and Guatemala and Belize. And their thing is, we have this one version of the Bible that's in German, right? And that's all they teach. Like when the kids go to school, that's all they teach. They don't teach any English, math, science, nothing. They learn that Bible, and your school is over.
That's very
done. And then all you do is go to church every week and learn that Bible. And again, you're not allowed to have anything. Like you said, you could be excommunicated if you have a cell phone. You know, they are hard.
That's a cult. Because that's a cult. And I mean, that's a whole nother conversation again. At the beginning of the Mormon thing, right? I'm watching the first couple of episodes, because I'd heard of a salamander letter.
Yeah.
So basically what it's about is this guy who was a part of the Mormon church, even though he wasn't like really heavy in Mormon ideals, but Mormons like, because of the Joseph Smith story, Mormons like discovering shit, right?
Yeah, discovering like different texts and different letters. And
people don't know. So he started finding all these like ancient texts and documents and shit. So including the salamander letter, which I'd heard of, but I didn't really know the details, mm-hmm. but it challenges the whole origin story of the church.
Yes.
So the first couple of episodes, I'm like, fucking knew it. Y'all motherfuckers, y'all made a social.
Can't say that night.
I know. I said I'm explaining the first couple of episodes. Killing my whole religion. But then it flipped. And yeah. I don't want to say anymore because that spoils
it. Yeah, because it spoils it. Yeah.
There's a whole murder plot and a whole whatever. But it's fascinating.
And this happened like in the 80s. Like this was recently. Like this or 90s. Like these people, like they're still alive.
But you also like Jeffrey. Like Book of Mormon was a Broadway hit. That shit makes fun of Mormonism. It's okay.
I'm just saying, no. What I'm saying is this.
I make fun of any extremist because it's ridiculous.
I'm saying this and then we're going to move on. But I'm saying is like, I'm saying all religions have extreme stories
extremism in religion is ridiculous. Even
an extreme story to me is a dude walking into an ocean and it's splitting in half. Like that's me.
But I think nine means the extremism in the rules. Like, if you are a believer, you have to do this thing, or we don't talk to you.
My doctrine is not based on whether or not Moses parted the Red Sea. That's simply a story that is told. My doctrine isn't based in that. Like, if Moses never did that, that doesn't actually change my beliefs, right?
Okay.
So that's the difference. Okay. The Bible is man written. There's a lot of stories. There's some stories that they cut out of the books of the Bible that Jesus was fucking fighting dragons and shit. I'm just saying, like, there's you have to see the Bible as literature, as a guide, as a guideline, as historic text, all at once. It's all at once.
Yeah, that we're gonna have that conversation one day on the drink. So let's jump into something that everybody's been talking about. We're jumping early. Let's talk about Coming to America 2. So
let me go.
Go ahead, nigga.
Coming to America, the original, is by far my favorite movie. Easily. Okay.
You know all the lines, you know the words.
100 times. I know every note to every song in that. Like, I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a standard, right? It's absolutely part of the culture, the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That said, I knew that I had to walk into this blind. I didn't watch previews. I didn't look at anybody else's reviews. I was like, let me just watch this purely for the nostalgia. Okay. I don't expect this to be like, you know, Critics' Choice Award, Oscar worthy. Yeah. I don't even expect it to make sense. Okay. I just want a little dose of nostalgia. Mm-hmm. So for me, I loved it.
Okay.
Loved
how tell me what you loved.
The plot was a little shaky, but I loved that they added so much music. They had cameos out the ass. I love that it was like stupid. It was a little bit ridiculous.
A little goofy.
I like that, you know, Wesley Snipes was dancing when he walked in. Like, no one does that. I thought it was visually stunning. I did really like it. I watched it twice.
Yeah. See, that's,
I was looking for it to be something crazy and, you know, change my mind about the original. I just wanted a decent experience. And
That's what I was going to say. I watched it a second time because the first time I did watch previews and I did see a couple people. So you went in
with expectations?
A little bit. I mean, again, not that it would match the first one because I don't think that's possible to match a movie that culturally important to us. So I didn't, but I guess I had some. But then when I watched it the second time without that and kind of knew what was going to happen, I enjoyed it even more. I enjoyed it a lot more the second time I watched it.
Right.
Me too.
And again, yeah, some of it is goofy and, you know, whatever, but I don't really give a shit about it. The only thing I wish they would have done, and it's so small, it doesn't matter, is I wish they would have dressed Daryl and the sister. Patrice.
Yeah.
I wish they would have just been like, oh, they took them. Yeah, yeah. But that's small, that's minor bullshit.
But did they even really get together?
Yeah, did they get but again, that's minor bullshit. That's just me. You know what I'm saying? But besides that, I love the cameos. I love, you know, Auntie Gladys in there. I love, you know.
I thought that was great.
Tracy and Leslie, like, made me laugh, like, out loud a couple times.
Was really good in it.
She was really good. I really liked the fact that both his daughter and his son's love interest were these beautiful, you know, brown girls. You know, these kind of dark-skinned, they're both beautiful women. I love that they threw peaches in the twins at the end rapping and
shit. Yeah,
you
know, that was great.
I, you know, again, is it Oscar? No, but yeah. It was all right.
Even like the credits and stuff, I like that. You know, like
John redoing Queen of Bees was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, John. Did you know he was doing that?
No, he didn't know they were putting it in the end credits.
Oh,
he did it, I guess, as part of the. He was like, I had no idea they were putting that shit in the end credits.
That's because
I don't know if y'all could tell, but that's him on the Coming to America.
The theme song. Mm-hmm.
So
okay, I also went into it zero expectations. I was one of the people who, when it first was announced, was like, we don't need this, because but when I saw the first set of photos from it, I got excited to see it, just again on nostalgia. Same. Right. Sorry, Washington Heights. It's warm outside today. Niggas is outside.
Oh yeah, the boys.
I don't know if y'all can hear the bike boys outside. They've been outside all day. But here's what I will say: going into it as a nostalgia trip, I was fine with it. Right. I would have been annoyed to see that in theaters though. At home, streaming, all good. And I have a couple of pieces of back information. The first thing is, Eddie did not know that Paramount was going to sell it to Amazon. He wanted to wait.
Yeah, I heard. But yeah, I read, and then I heard that what happened was, because Paramount was going to
put out like everything.
They were going to put out like a couple years from now, like 2023 or some shit. They were really holding it for a while. So it actually worked out that Amazon got it because they were able to put out much faster.
Right, but Eddie wanted to hold it. Eddie wanted to wait until it could be in theaters.
Yeah, so I wouldn't have wanted to wait that long.
The second thing is, it went through a bunch of different script changes, which I feel like it made me feel. And also, there was supposed to be a big McDowell's tie-in around the movie, which is why there was so much McDowell's new product shit. There was supposed to be
That makes sense.
Yeah, and McDowell scrapped it because it was coming out still during the pandemic and coming out on Amazon. And also, Eddie was supposed to play the Wesley character. But after Wesley was in Dolomite with him, he was so impressed.
He was like, you do this.
And he was like, okay, so that being said, I enjoyed it for what it was, right? But if I have to be critical, what got me about it and what I think is keeping some people from having been able to enjoy it is that they did a remake, not... Like, the reason long-time sequels like Bad Boys for Life or, like, Best Man Holiday work is because they harken back to the touch points that people loved about the first one without trying to make another version of the first one, right? This was trying to hit every single beat that people loved from the first one. Not even the beats that were important to the storyline, but it was like, what are the things that over the years
people
reference the most, right? Because we didn't, some of it did feel forced to me.
Like the barbershop, the barbershop,
even like the end, like I'm glad they had peaches in them in there, but I'm like, I mean, okay. You know what I mean? Like some of it did feel like they literally, it was the same storyline in reverse, exact same. Sun, fish out of water, king, change the outdated law, whatever.
Marry a girl that you love.
Yeah. But they, between trying to have it be about Eddie and, you know, Akeem and Lisa, the prince and the girl, Leslie and all, there were too many characters we needed to pay attention to for real. And it felt like it felt crowded. Like Lisa and Akeem's story had a full arc. This boy, I don't even remember the boy's name. Darnell, whatever the fuck, Lavelle, whatever his name, like,
Lavelle.
I don't even remember
Lavelle Johnson.
I don't remember nobody's name who was new. I don't remember the daughter's name. I don't remember nobody's name who was new.
Yeah, I remember.
And we had to follow so much. And that love story, they hung out like 3 times. She told him, like, you know, whatever. I didn't believe it. I believed it.
Her and him and the girl?
Yeah, him and the girl. And all of a sudden, he's ready to get married. Like, whatever. I think that Tracy Morgan was underutilized. I felt like it was too much Leslie. But I mean,
so in the original script though, Tracy Morgan was supposed to be the son, but the age difference was so ridiculous. There's only like five years between them that they found another way to use him in the movie, which is why he's not. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm saying I enjoyed it for what it was, but it really was like, this is like coming to America's greatest hits. And they also were consciously trying to bridge a gap for the story with a new generation, which you could tell as well. So, I mean, again, for what it was, for a nostalgia play, it was fine, but I also understand why some people are disappointed, but I'm also like, why did you go in with such high expectations? I think Coming to America, I always say Coming to America, Color Purple, and Friday are 3 movies that are woven into Black culture lexicon more than any other movies. Like,
Yeah, we reference them all the time.
Like, we'd be like, aha, or Sex with Chocolate, or It Sounds So Beautiful, Don't You Agree? Or what is that?
Velvet?
Or Yes, It Is My Birthday. Like, we use so much shit. Mm-hmm. It's just in the lexicon, it's in us, right? You can't duplicate that. You really can't.
Did people
agree?
I mean, and maybe I'm just tripping, but did people realize that, you remember, this is a little thing, but when he was walking with his son and the elephant came up?
And it was Babar?
Yeah, did people realize that was the baby elephant from?
I did.
They do a whole scene where he.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they do a flashback scene. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So, bro, what did you think?
I thought the movie was okay.
Okay.
As a standalone movie, I thought the movie was okay. It got a 65 on the midterm.
Nigga gave it a D.
Niggas crammed. Nigga crammed the night before. Got a 68. Right. So, I mean, listen. Here's my criticism about the film is people are saying you should not have expectations and you should not go into it because this is its own movie, and that's not exactly accurate, right? Because clearly they're trying to encapsulate what they had,
right?
So like we can't divorce it from the first one. Now, I'm not saying that I thought that it was going to be as good or as funny, because one, I think that we're missing a very important part here, which is John Landis, right? Like that is the director, and you're missing the subtle humor that is what that was. Mm. To me, Coming to America was a great comedy, and this is almost comedy satire.
Like slapstick.
Yes, it's a little slapstick, right? Like the over-the-top Wesley Snipes character. And, you know, some of the cameos I could have done without, right? Like I didn't necessarily need Michael Blackson. I'm good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm okay with that, right?
Yeah. God bless him to get a check, but you know.
I've always told you guys, like, I've expressed how I feel about Leslie Jones. Like, I really, really like her. Actually find her more entertaining and more funny in these pockets when she's able, not necessarily as a stand-up comic, but when she's able to sort of bounce off of people. Mm-hmm. She's really, really funny. She's really, really witty. You can tell she's a great person to hang out with. You can tell they, you know what I'm saying? So I'm definitely looking forward to whatever the outtakes the documentary is.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, I mean, I get it. Right. And I agree. I felt like Tracy Morgan was underutilized. And I'll say this. To me, I would have liked to see Eddie and Arsenio do
more,
almost different characters.
Yeah.
Right. First of all, we're clear. Mr. Clarence, Sweets, and Morris got to be 95 years old.
They should have been dead.
The Jewish character should have definitely been dead.
He was 75 and 88.
Yeah,
that barbershop should have been an artisan coffee shop.
Absolutely.
So, I get what they tried to do, and that was actually the funnier scenes to me, because Eddie being in character and being that old black person is always funny to me. Like, don't be handing me no money all rough. It's just, that's some real black.
And when he walked down, he was like, "Who do you think he's talking to?"
To whoop your ass. Like, that's real black shit that you can kind of connect with. Nobody believed the character. The Prince Lavelle fell in love with her. He doesn't chase her in the way Akeem chases Lisa McDowell. There's no point where, you know, there's the epiphany scene where he's, you know, at the Miss Black Awareness rally.
And you know
what I'm saying? Like, there's nothing that makes it a cat and mouse game, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no hurdle, right? Remember, she has Daryl.
There's no
hurdle for him to sort of weave around. He has Daryl. The father thinks he's poor. He has to now show and do all of these sorts of things that just was missing in this. I loved the current event, the current situations that they kind of brought up, you know, like clearly, you know, discussing, you know, touching women and things of that nature. Right. Like you can clearly see, you know, women being capable, the daughter being capable, like clearly she's capable. She has done this her whole life, and you're just bypassing her. So all of those sorts of things were cool. But as a standalone movie, like the reality is like, am I going to actively say, I'm going to go downstairs to the theater and watch this movie? No. If I'm cooking
Come on, downstairs to the theater.
Downstairs to the theater. Come on, my own popcorn machine.
If I'm cooking and it's on in the background, I'm not going to be like, turn that shit off.
I got right. you.
It's one of those movies. And I think that, and let me just say this too. For the people that didn't like it, okay, they don't fucking hate black people. Okay, no one is angry and no one is this. We got to the point where if you didn't like this movie and you didn't think it was the best thing since sliced bread, you was a hater, tearing down your people, and this is why we can't have nothing.
So I'm like, can't have nice things.
Nigga, like, I didn't like the movie. I'm not trading Eddie for Adam Sandler, my nigga. Like, we're not, you know what I'm saying?
I do think it didn't need heavy, like, analysis and like
think piece Twitter, nigga. Just watch the movie and enjoy it.
I think that I would have liked to have seen them do a little more with Eddie. Like, and there were some things that were just like I said. I don't know if I'm using the right language, but it felt more satire more heavy-handed. And I didn't think that was necessary for people like that comedy lineup. Mm-hmm. Like to me, to have Rodney Perry and Lunell have basically no lines.
Yeah, thank you, Lunell.
Like, why are they there?
Like, why are they like? And Jamie Flowers, I like. That's the guy who plays Lavelle Johnson. He was on a great show that I used to love on CBS, Superior Donuts. Like, he's a talented dude. This mm-hmm. is no slight to him, but I think. As to your point, I think that script was a little all over the place. Yeah, I think mm-hmm. they focused a lot on the wardrobe, right? Like, yeah. Ruth Carter clearly
she did that.
Did that shit. That orange that Eddie had on was mean as motherfucker. But,
hell yeah.
But, you know, there was just some things that just, you know, they fell flat. That's all. Yeah. It just fell flat.
And the dude who played the son, there were some moments where I was like, okay, I see it. There were some moments where
not a new Jack. Like, he's a working actor. He's a dude who gets timing. What's the guy who was in Taxi, the famous one? Not Danny DeVito. There was another guy from Taxi. He was a comedian, a comedic actor. I can't remember. His name has escaped me. But that's who was on Superior Donuts. He's going toe-to-toe with
Judd Hirsch, right?
Judd Hirsch. Like, he's going toe-to-toe with guys with real comedic timing and background, and he gets it.
So, I think the script was a little... But I didn't believe him as a king. I didn't believe he was a king's son, but that's a whole... And I kept forgetting he was supposed to be 30. He was acting like a 24-year-old. Like, you know, 30. It was just like little shit like that. And to your point, Sean, for me, there was a lot of wire to hear. Like, I understand the effort at continuity, and I appreciate it, but why did you bring Garcelle Bouvier back to still be a flower person? Like, now the
she didn't get a raise in 30 years.
She was the head of the flower.
In 30 years, bitch, you still passing out. Like, you ain't done shit out. You know what I'm
saying?
You
got a better dress, nice.
We ain't need all, and she ain't even have a speech. We ain't need all them motherfuckers to come.
And what's the call them too? Vanessa Bell Calloway.
Yeah, Vanessa Bell Calloway is still hopping on my foot. We didn't need all of that.
That to me was a little, I just feel like there was so many ways to actually incorporate those people. Right. Incorporate those characters, but not in such a heavy-handed slapstick way.
She's still hopping.
30 know? Years, bro. 30 years.
She would have bad knees and all that.
Yeah, the same dress. Like, come on, B.
Oh, by the way, peace to Rick Ross, because they filmed that movie in his house.
Some of it. The bedroom, the dining room, and the main hallway were the interior of his house, and some of the exteriors.
Yeah,
the faraway shot of the full cast.
Yeah, yeah,
that was which used to be
Evander Holyfield's. Yeah, Holyfield's.
And then
the scene that he's in, I think, is in his backyard.
Yeah, and then the other scenes they shot, they base it on his house design,
like the look.
Yeah, so and
he's piece to him because he caught a nice check.
Yeah, and also they
2.7 or something like that.
That's what he caught for that. Nice.
That's what he said.
And they also left him some furniture, and he got the cameo.
Yeah, God bless. He won. Win.
That's dope. But overall, like I said, I do think there are some people who want it like Black Panther level focus on realism and details. And
no, it wasn't.
And you know, because I saw somebody say something about it being like the white gays version of Africa, and I was like, that's dead.
Oh, come on. That's,
because when Coming to America came out before, you know, before Lion King, before like anything that had anything to do with African royalty in any form. I know Lion King is animals, but still, we know it was white people playing all the characters. But it's like any of that. Coming to America came before that, right? And I think Eddie did it over the top because he wanted to show modern world on the continent instead of like the shit we had on the Budweiser poster, which was kings and queens from like hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, he wanted to show it like now. If you look,
yeah, show it now and also make it look very like he wanted pageantry and make it look really beautiful and make it very regal. So it was over the top on purpose. You know what I'm saying? So, so for it to be a true part two, they were going to continue with
that. Yeah, they had to continue that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so like, yeah, so, you know, we liked it. I'm going to watch it again. Next week, I'm
going to. I don't know if I'm going to be
pressed. I mean, I'm not going to watch it like 40. I'm not going to watch it 40 times, but I'm not going to watch it again. Bro, next week, let's talk about Last Chance U.
I haven't seen it.
It just came on. I think it dropped yesterday. So like, you know, if you get a chance, like check it out. It's good. It's a basketball this year. It's good. It's interesting, but I won't give anything away. Wanted to also mention, Versus. So Timberland and Swizz Beatz have, I don't know if it's sold or partnered with, Triller.
You could say sold.
Okay.
You could say sold.
Okay. Okay. Say so sold Versus to Triller, which is a large app. Which an app that was early, like kind of right around the time Vine was out, I think Triller dropped by then. It was an app that a lot of kids would go to Triller at that point and do like dances and stuff. A lot of those kind of dances came from kids dancing on Triller. But they've been, in my opinion, overtaken by like everything else by TikTok. And so they are now trying to rebrand it and not just be like this kids dance app because it doesn't have the tracking that it had maybe 3 to 4 years ago. So they bought Versus and Timbaland and Swizz Beatz are now brand ambassadors for Triller. And I think they also are shareholders and also members of the board, I believe. And in the press release, they said what they're going to do was take some of the shares that they got from the sale and split them among the 43 Versus artists that came previous to the sale. And I don't know, look at bro's face. I don't know how
split
much.
Split might be a strong
word. I'm just saying what the press release says. It says they're splitting them among the 43 artists. Now, I don't know how much. Insurance rates is crazy. I don't know how much that means. I don't know what percentage this person gets. I don't know anything about it. I'm just telling y'all what the press release says. So they were like giving back for like getting to them to this point.
So I look like your mama when you come in late and you explain to her.
They're lying. You're lying. I was over Karen's house when her phone died.
My phone died. And
get up there and do them dishes. So that's that. I mean, I don't know what this means. There's an interesting wrinkle in this, which is Triller and Universal are in the middle of a lawsuit because of music clearances or whatnot. So Universal Music Group has banned all their music from the Triller app as of now, I guess, until maybe one day they work this out, which is a massive hit because Universal Music Group is the biggest music
Universal Music Group controls the majority of, especially Black music catalog.
This is what I'm saying.
Period.
It's that's like, what I'm saying. It's a massive hit. So there's a lot of artists that are not going to be able to be involved with this.
Yep. That's Interscope. Uptown. That's Interscope. That's
Capital.
Capital. Like, that's a lot.
And Universal, music. Republic. Like, it's a lot.
Yep, that's a lot.
So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But I guess congratulations are in order. We'll see how this, you know, turns into something, whatever.
I mean, congratulations is in order for them. Yeah. And they did what you know, this is a part of business.
This is business.
Right? Like, this is a part of business. You build
sell high.
You build an IP and maybe you, this was probably, if I had to bet, and I have no knowledge, if I had to bet, they've been looking to do this for a little while. Probably
when I would bet that
when it was a little more fire to it, mm-hmm. and could not get a deal that would have given them some sort of equity. And I would right. and I would bank on them feeling like, hey, we're not cash short, right? Like, they're not struggling to pay a mortgage.
Yeah, they good.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So they wanted some equity.
Well, Swiss basically told me that in the beginning, like, they weren't going to do something that was going to bring them revenue, but also, like, kill their ability to control what versus.
Control the brand, yeah.
But, yeah. And my guess is that this might also be why they've been kind of floundering. I hate floundering might be a strong word, but why it feels like they're off a little bit recently because they might have been trying to get this deal done.
Yeah, it could be.
It could also be.
Part of why.
Yeah, and the other part is probably more along the lines of what we all sort of predicted, is that as you get to a point where this is no longer an event and you have people of lesser famous people, I guess. I don't want to say less caliber. But, you know, people are not necessarily tuned in. I mean, those D'Angelo numbers were really, really surprising. Even on a humble, you thought he might have cleared 200.
Yeah.
And now, you know, outside is opening up. The Vackies is out here.
Yeah.
Niggas getting stimmies.
Stimmy coming.
Stimmy coming. Vackies. Yeah. And spring.
Yeah.
Nigga.
Ain't nobody sitting in the house on Saturday night.
Side.
Niggas is not watching no fucking verses on their phone. Niggas is in the street.
Exactly. Getting it cracking. So.
Personally am not going to Triller to watch verses ever.
Well, yeah. And that's the other.
That's the other thing.
Yeah, I think that they're looking at this probably from a bigger play, and that Versus is part of this and not the soul of this deal for them. Mm-hmm. You know, they now get to brand something new, make something new. Because really, in my opinion, this brand is associated with IG.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even when Apple came into play, the brand was still associated with IG. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they're going to look to develop something a little more identifiable to Thriller and make that a real, you know, thing over there, which is why they want to be a part of the board and they want to be a part of the brands, because they want to be able to say, this is hot, this ain't.
This ain't fly, this ain't hot. Yeah, so. Yeah, so, you know, God bless. Peace to them. I wanted to mention. I'm going to give a shout out to my to our boy J.R. Lindsay. Me and him is doing some business together. It's going really.
Oh, hey,
we just doing some business together. Oh, okay. I ain't doing nothing bad. We doing some business together. It's going really, really well. And he asked me to give him a shout out. So
of course he did. I'll piggyback off of that, because JR was like one of my closest allies at Columbia. JR, for the record, signed Earl Sweatshirt to the mm-hmm. label. Mm-hmm. And there was some artists he was looking at, and the label just didn't get it.
It sounded like
he mm-hmm. brought Chance in, and they passed back when Chance was actually open to getting a deal. Mm-hmm. And some other artists that he was on early, and Columbia leadership just didn't see it. But that's my nigga. Like, we did Juicy J together, which, like, we were really in the trenches mm-hmm. together on that. Mm-hmm. So shout out to JR. That's my
Yeah, JR doing his thing.
Yeah.
Real quick, Real World. I don't know if it's called what it's called, but they have a Real World.
It was reunion. Like the reunion from season
Real World Homecoming.
Yeah, for the season one crew, who was New York, and who was, I think, still was the oldest cast they had, because everybody was in their
20s. Early 20s.
Everybody was 19.
Who was?
20, 21.
Julie was like 19.
Oh, was she?
I feel like they were older than other cast members that came after, because I thought they skewed back down, because one of them was in their 20s, because they were.
Was older.
I think they went to focusing on a drinking age after maybe season three. So they did New York, I believe it was New York, LA, San Francisco. And I believe after San Francisco, they really started to focus on that just legal enough to drink so we're not looking crazy out here.
Yeah.
Because they wildin'.
Yeah.
Yeah. College age. Yeah. Yeah. Older.
So I've only seen one episode. I think it's six episodes altogether. They're back in the same apartment. Obviously they're all middle-aged people. Fortunately, none of them have passed away. They're all still here living. Eric is not with them because he has COVID. He got COVID right before they were taken. So he's like in his hotel room. I think he comes later, but the first episode, he's like in the
hotel room. I think they go see him or something.
But they go see him. Yeah, yeah. But yeah. So, it's just, you know, so the first episode is them kind of catching up and, you know, seeing how each other's are, because Kevin says that for the most part, they haven't all been together at one time. And since, like,
Since the reunion in '93,
I feel like I don't remember everything, but I remember that there was a point at which a lot of them weren't. But the white
people, he says that they wasn't fucking with each other.
Because Kevin like slapped one of them white girls or some shit. Something happened.
No, he argued with Julie.
Yeah, he argued with Julie.
No, the slap came later. I remember that. That was Seattle when the black dude slapped the girl because she called him gay.
Right.
Steven, that was his name. Yeah. I think it ended up being like a cross dresser or something. Whatever. So anyway, so it's kind of, I think he did though. I think he did though. But it's kind of, you are Inca. So
the information that Jeffrey knows.
I think I remember that. But anyway, so it's very interesting to kind of see them. But you kind of see just the tensions haven't gone away in some spots already. You see, like, and you know, they show clips where later on it gets a little, you know, more hardcore. But you could see this, like, we're happy to see each other, but I'm not really that happy to see you, motherfucker. But like, you know,
I'm still not fucking with you.
Exactly.
I think that the conflict though is mostly with Becky. She's the only one that's so. Julie has experienced a lot of growth from the time she was 19. She's a really naive, like Oklahoman. I think she's from Oklahoma.
Alabama,
something like that.
Wasn't Becky the one who was fucking with a producer?
I don't know.
One of them came out like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of them had come out like towards the end of the season. They had to let one of the producers go because one of the girls was fucking him out.
Yeah, and Becky's come from a rich family.
I think it was her.
Yeah,
Becky's still out here white womaning.
Yeah, she's definitely.
You look at the previews. She's very.
She's very like, my life is phenomenal. I don't know what you niggas is doing, but I'm great. You know what I'm saying? But so we're gonna kind of keep up with that, you know, as it goes on. Also wanted to mention my favorite reality show came back.
Wait, sorry to interrupt. I would be really interested in them doing this again with the cast from season two, because I want to see Tammy and David get back in there. And especially now that Tammy is a reality star again.
Yeah.
But I always felt like David getting kicked out of the house was unfair.
Because
Tammy was playing around at first. And then it just went
left.
Completely left.
And wild left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also want to mention my favorite reality show came back on, Married to the Medicines.
That's your favorite reality show?
I love Married to the Medicines. I love it.
Okay.
I love it. Because it's like, I always say this, Married to the Medicines, first of all, one of the things I love about Married to the Medicines is that they have real jobs.
I love that you call it that.
Because they have jobs. Like, they really are doctors. They're not just like, I'm cute. Yeah. Like, no. They're like, I'm going to work. Like, I got to fucking deliver a baby.
Everybody has a job except for Toya.
Except for Toya and her bullshit. Happy. Yeah, but I like the fact, and they are like your down south cousins who, like, from the outside, you know, yeah, they got jobs, they got the cars, they got the nice houses, but then you kind of peeking inside to see shit ain't sweet like it looked like on the outside. There's obviously, like, issues of marriages. Blah, blah, blah. But anyway, they came back Sunday. I enjoyed it. I saw somewhere the ratings are really down, though. I don't know if it's Bravo.
I think it's Bravo in general.
Yeah, I think people are just kind of burnt.
I think people are burnt out on that formula. And I think people are burnt out of the arguing black women on reality TV show formula, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
I will say they're also a little tired of them.
And
it's not black women. It's
those women.
Fucking Jackie and Simone arguing about the same shit in year three, or Heavenly being nasty in year six.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is what I was explaining about the Real Housewives of Atlanta, is that there's a point when the consistency of this banter is no longer enjoyable to watch.
Absolutely. Right?
And guess what? you're coming up on that with Potomac pretty soon too.
Okay? Oh hell yeah!
You got another year of fucking, you know, the mean girl, the green eyed mean girls.
Yeah.
Against, you know what I'm saying? So that's really what I think is happening. Also, let me give you. I would like to get perspective on those numbers, right? Are those numbers down?
It said it is 700 something thousand in the premiere. 729. Yeah,
I also didn't see any promo for that. I didn't know that was happening until it showed up. I was looking for something else on Bravo and it was on the front screen. I was like, oh, damn, that came back.
We have to see what's relative to that number. You have to remember that they are doctors, so they are not of the blog culture in that way. True. Unlike most other reality people, they, you know, so they're not a part of that. Like, they can't really do a press day, right?
Because they got to work.
They got to work.
Right? I got to go in. I got to go 4 to 12. I got 4 to 12.
Yeah.
I couldn't get Stanley to switch with me.
Exactly.
I think it will be interesting to see them just as doctors in this pandemic. Like, just because that's the perspective we haven't seen on TV as far as COVID.
And they definitely started off the first episode with COVID, because obviously they're working in it, you know, and they talk about what they're dealing with at the hospitals and, you know, and how, you know, how much, you know, at that time, how much death and people were sick and da-da-da-da. So they talk a lot about that. Simone and Jackie still aren't speaking. And that really, like, irks me, you know, from knowing from what, how they were, how close they were, like sisters.
Yeah, that's really sad. They've been friends for a really long time.
23 years.
Show.
Yeah. Jackie delivered both her sons. Like, they're like fucking 16 when they were. You know, so it's oh, but you got to see your boy Cecil, bro. Your man, he trying to stay young, nigga. He out here.
Nigga haircut.
He got the
nigga, boy haircut. Like, you better stop going to barbershop with Michael. And go. You better go find you a Mr. Clarence, nigga. Stop trying to go to them young boy barbers.
Cecil going to the young spot. He gonna be wearing Jordans all season. Watch, nigga.
I do have to say, Gene, like watching him and Toya's interaction is always fascinating, because she complains about him not spending time. Mm-hmm. As though he's like at golf outings or like you're not home, and this nigga's just like a cigar lounge.
Yeah,
like he just did 14 hours, bro. Like
he's making the money that you spend,
yo. And like, you're like doing? On his neck.
Yeah,
like, and so somebody said on Twitter the other day when it premiered, yo, Gene gained all his weight back.
Yeah, I saw that. He got big.
Listen, I can only imagine the stress levels from work.
Yeah.
And then to come home, like episode one, we're not even 7 minutes in, and she's complaining. I don't want to be a judge about parenting. I don't want to come off like that. So when she asked about, she asked her son, like, what are you praying for? Mm-hmm. She was asking him about praying for COVID or something, you know, praying for that COVID goes away. And he was like, yo, I'm praying for a fucking dirt bike. Like, basically, like, I'm not praying. I'm like, COVID is not. Like,
I want this PS5. What's up?
Basically, right? And so at first, I'm like, man, that seems a little. I mean, she definitely seemed like she was caught off guard by that, because it was on camera, right? Like, and it seemed a little, for, you know, a kid that age, they usually start to understand things that impact other people versus stuff of my personal feeling. But
I know where you're going with this. I know you're
not even 7 minutes later, she's bitching about not being able to go to the coast of Italy.
Yeah.
Like my nigga, like guess what? Nobody went to the coast of Italy.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Y'all didn't do it because you couldn't afford it.
Yeah. Like, this wasn't about you. Like, Your man's in the hospital, like, not knowing what the fuck is going on.
Watching people die and people stuck on ventilators.
And fucking Georgia that never closed.
Yeah.
He's in the ER in Georgia.
And it's like, your life ain't bad. You're driving around in a golf cart, like, all day, like, hanging out.
In a fucking custom house. Like, sit down.
Yo, like the incessant need to be centered and have this sort of fairy tale-ish princesses lifestyle is so, it's honestly, man, like, and again, I'm only saying this as it pertains to television. I don't know this woman. This is only a snapshot of her life, but it feels really, really immature. And it feels like that's why I do it. Like, he's carrying the weight of all of that shit.
All that
every fucking day. Yeah. It's almost like there's nothing. You wanted the house. He went out. He busted his ass. He got y'all out of tax debt. He got the house. He built the house in a location where there's massive inventory for a home.
Monster inventory.
and he built you a fucking house from the ground up. And you still on his neck.
You still like, I want to go to Italy.
I want to go to Italy. We ain't got no time. How you think they paying for 7,000 square feet?
Exactly. Now, I don't know if you caught this, bro. But that motherfucker's on the market, or they put that motherfucker on the market, the house. Now they claim they put that. This is according to the blogs and what have yous. They claim they put it on the market because the property value went up, and they want to like sell it, like because it's going up in value. But I've never owned a house, so you could definitely tell me this better than I would know. But even still, I'm assuming they have a mortgage. They've only been in this mortgage probably like a year. Like, who do you sell a crib this quick, or would you just take the equity out that went up if you needed extra cash?
Well, you don't. You basically don't have any equity because at that point you got your down payment.
You ain't been in long enough, and that's
granted that you have a traditional loan. He may not have a traditional loan. He might have an adjustable rate, a 5-1. You might have some interest only shit, where he's only paying the interest on a, you know, nothing down on the principal, so there's no equity in that. But you can, if you, that theory works on a smaller scale. In my opinion, that theory is like, if you buy a house for $340,000 and your house is now worth $475,000 or $500,000, that might be something that person will entertain, because $100,000, $125,000 is a substantial amount of money.
Yeah.
For someone to be able to, you know, grab out of a home.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about, I would have to assume those are seven-figure homes.
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. When you're talking about, hey, I could sell my crib that's I paid 124 or 134, I can now sell it for like, you know, 145, or you know what I'm saying, 15. Like, that is not the same level. That $100,000, that $200,000 gain is not the same, because remember your carrying cost is very different at a house that size.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's not a turn. Like, dude, your market is very, very small at that
level. Wow. Especially because you built it, so it's specific for you.
Your, like, dude, at that price point, motherfuckers is looking for turnkey homes. They are not coming in. I hope them boys ain't bust up in the walls or nothing yet. And been writing and drawing their fucking growth sizes. You know what I'm saying? But, I mean, listen, I get it. This also might be an out. What COVID has really done as well has reminded people that, one, maybe we don't need as much as we thought we needed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what might happen tomorrow. And if, you know, if for whatever reason, my ability to earn drastically changes. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. This is all based on what we, you know, your goals or what you think you're going to have, right? Mm-hmm. And that shit might change. And again, this is no shot. Gene is clearly a man that could provide a more than sufficient lifestyle for his family.
Yeah.
But this might be one of those things.
A little bit too much.
It's stretching my man thin. Mm-hmm. And he's probably on the brink of some debilitating shit. I'm sure his blood pressure is crazy.
Yeah.
We saw that on the show.
Yeah, we saw that on the show. Yeah, so... Yeah, so we're gonna keep up with the Married to the Medicines. One thing
before we jump.
Go.
How is old girl? You ain't even been introduced yet. Why is you up in their house talking? You that was crazy to me.
When you're new on a Bravo show, you gotta come in with a bang. Nigga. That's just that's like, all that is. She's like, trying to stay around.
A good friend. I'm like, who the fuck? Who? I didn't even know your name yet.
I was when she popped up. Say, I was like, who are you?
Yeah, who are you?
Who mans is this?
You was not here last year. What the fuck are you talking about?
And I still don't know her name at the end of the episode. I don't know who the fuck
and Tila. Whatever.
Sure.
It sounds good. Close enough.
that little Indian gal.
Yeah, the little Indian gal, and who seems to be a Toya because she don't work neither.
And the husband's
the doctor, and she's on some like I'm shopping, blah 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 blah. So and they showed in the previews.
Well, the husband's a surgeon.
No, he getting more money than Gene. He getting money, but there seems to be a clash where he's kind of like, yo, not that they can't afford it, but you still need to chill. Like you wilding a bit with the money.
Yeah,
you're doing a little much. Now, we okay, but like, did you need to buy those? So that type of shit. Anyway, let's jump into the last
part.
Let's just jump into the last thing, which is Meghan Markle and Prince Harry. This thing, I have not
seen that much tea spilled in 45 minutes in a very long time. My mouth was open the whole interview.
That is the first interview that I've seen Oprah's mouth open for most of it.
Yeah, Oprah was for like, a few minutes. She was
wait,
like,
what the fuck did you just say? Yeah, exactly. Like it was, Oprah's been, Oprah's obviously like the GOAT interviewer, and she's done some really big interviews with some obviously major stars in different fields, and Michael Jackson and all kind of shit. And even I've never seen her be like, wait, what? Like what they did? Oh, I bet you're lying. Seriously? Like, it was that level shit. So Prince Harry and Meghan Markle interviewed, was mostly Meghan. I guess if it was 2 hours, I'd say Meghan was probably like an hour 15 or so. And then Harry came in probably like the last 45 and interviewed about her, their life and their experience as royals and why they left. It was a very fascinating interview. Just very fascinating. Meghan is, she's a trained actress. She's a very beautiful woman, extraordinarily well spoken. Like she can kind of go do a lot of shit because she carries herself so fly. She's really smart. She's very
super sharp.
Sharp as a motherfucker. Like she takes her time. She's thinking. Even if the answers are a calculated answer, she. Thinking like she's, she's not just like talking shit,
They're not sound bites.
Not sound bites at all. Extremely poised, very, and knows how to ride that line of being extremely honest, but still like a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like it was jaw dropping without being salacious.
Yeah, yes, and I think it's important to note that Harry mentioned that once the royals saw her in action, the way he said it was familiar to them, meaning the way they saw how Diana learned how to command a certain amount of control, which meant that they felt like she was out of their control. I think that was part of it with Meghan too. Like she's a little too good because royals aren't supposed to be diplomatic. They're not supposed to have they're actually not, and this is why you need to watch The Crown, Jeffrey, but the Queen once said, like, we are meant to be a figurehead. We are not to involve ourselves in politics. We're not supposed to have opinions. We're not supposed to like, dislike, whatever. We are a representation, right? So when they start acting too much as individuals, the institution or the organization or whatever you want to call it gets nervous because that's not their role.
Yeah, that's not their role. Yeah, and Meghan came to them as, unlike Diana, people kind of forget when when Charles married Diana, she was crazy young.
Like 19.
She had just turned 20.
She was a child.
She was to marry into some form of the royal family, even if it had been a cousin, like even if it had been a lord.
Exactly.
Or some shit like that, and not like actually one of the immediate members of the royal family. She was meant to marry some form of aristocracy.
Exactly. Whereas Meghan came to them as a fully formed woman. She worked. She had her own money. She had been married and divorced.
Yep.
Yeah. She had lived a life.
She was moved 30
around,
plus.
Moved around in Hollywood. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. She fucked a couple niggas. Like she did her thing.
She was 31. Like, she was a grown ass woman.
So she came into it as a fully formed woman, older than Harry as well. So she, it was a very different game. And then once, they, like Nas said, once she got into it, they, I remember they talked about on this interview, they did the, Harry did the comparison of Diana's first trip to Australia and Meghan's first trip to Australia. When Diana did her first trip to Australia, and the people in Australia went nuts. They loved her. They went over the moon. And
and loved her more than Charles. She got more attention than Charles. That was
like way more than Charles. And so that's when they started getting nervous about her. Like, oh, we might have a supernova on our hands. Let's try to shut it down. And the same thing when Meghan went with Harry to Australia, that actually was even worse. The same tour, but that was actually even worse because Meghan obviously is not married to the future king. So the fact that Meghan got the most applause and accolades over William, Kate, well, Harry didn't give a fuck because that's his girl. But like, it was like, oh shit, wait, she's bigger than Kate. And that was, to me, that's the issue with her and Kate. She bigger than Kate. She flyer than Kate. She got doper friends than Kate. She friends with Serena and this one now. And like, Kate's like, Kate. I know. Go ahead.
Kate was supposed to be that. Go ahead.
Kate was supposed to be that. Exactly. Kate was supposed
to be that. Kate was positioned like going to the school that William went to and being in that friend circle. And even the way she was raised, like all of that was to be this quote unquote commoner that became royal. She's supposed to be, you know,
supposed to be that second coming of Diana.
But Kate ain't got that swag.
But she falls flat. But the other thing is that it also reflects. Like, there was a time where Prince William was, like, the prince people...
He was the hot boy.
He was the hot boy. But then as Harry got older, all of a sudden, motherfuckers was like, but Harry is out here and is cool as shit and is rugged. And then it became like, oh... Because on one level, what everybody wants to do is compare everybody to Diana, which is so unfair to the guys. But first it was like, William is so like his mother and he's so kind. Then it was like, oh, Harry is his mama, right? But also people really loved, I think, Harry's independent streak because he knew he was never going to be king. So like, who the fuck?
So he did him.
He had a different level of freedom than William ever had.
Yeah, and he's also the queen. Harry was doing. He's also the queen's favorite.
Yeah.
So there's also that. He's the queen's favorite. And it's
And he served two tours and was it, is it Afghanistan?
I think so.
But he did like, royal. And like he was in it for real. Like it wasn't no figurehead shit. Like that motherfucker was in it.
Well, right. They both were. In fairness to William. They both were. Like, there just wasn't a level of conflict when William
They're all
was.
Supposed to. They all have to.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. You
know. So I mean,
think we see that clip of him running after the helicopter in that interview where we get all but like he's I don't think that he's seen combat. Like they wouldn't that's not a thing.
They wouldn't have put him on the front lines. Okay. What I appreciate about Harry, grown man Harry, right? And what I appreciate about him, even in his interview, even though he was still trying to walk the line, like speaking truth about his family, he can do it now because they've basically been excommunicated from the royal family in a sense, from the royal family, not from like the bloodline, but from like
from the institution,
actual titled family, the institution of the crown, right? Mm-hmm. But speaking that frankly about the crown. For Meghan to do it would have been one thing. For Harry to do it, that's unheard of. Like even Prince Edward when he abdicated the throne, even he didn't speak that frankly.
Yeah.
About, but he was also excommunicated from the crown at that point. So it's like that part was shocking to me. But what I really appreciate about Harry is even for him, like how much he's very much like my fucking family. Comes first.
Yeah, first like, and foremost.
It's like he speaks in us and we.
Yeah.
All the time. I so appreciate that shit. Like,
well, I think one of the, you know, we're talking shit because we don't, you know, I really know, but I assume one of the reasons that he speaks this frankly about it, besides the fact that, you know, the being excommunicated and they cut his money off and the security notch, which we'll get into, is
his mom.
Yeah, because of his mom and because of his girl. He's like, yo, man, I watch what you motherfuckers try to do to my girl. Like, and like it's just bullshit. Like, you know, like she's, you know, I'm literally cradling her in my arms while her talking about she doesn't know she want to be alive anymore. And she's going to y'all for help. And y'all are like, yo, whatever, be stiff up a lip. You
and know, also, like, I guess some sense of responsibility. Like, she's going through this because of me.
Of course, she's going
through this because she's married to me. She's going through this because she chose to come into my world and I couldn't keep her safe, right? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. or I have a responsibility to keep her safe because this is because she's married to me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, y'all can talk about it once, but there was so many fascinating parts of the interview. Like, obviously, people have been up in arms about the, people think it was Charles asking about the Archie's skin color, and again about them not wanting to help, and then how they.
Your aunt Gladys asked about.
I think it was William.
The baby's skin color.
Imani,
but the baby's is brown. He
shout out to my friend Imani because she was like, "How many of y'all raise your hand if you got?" No, she actually said, "Not for nothing." A lot of y'all got your meemaws and your papas been checking behind the mirrors and checking them.
You're going to get dark, you know? So that and about her, like I said earlier, about her not being able to get help for and this is the general slights, like the story she told about how she corrected the record about like, nah, I didn't make Kate cry. She made me cry with the flower girl shit. And like, again, just being so honest about everything that was happening and just kind of, you know, peeling back a curtain that a lot of people didn't know what was happening behind. You know, people watch The Crown and stuff like that, but like you're hearing it like literally from the horse's mouth about what happens behind the scenes and how the Queen, again, I'm talking shit because obviously I'm not from England, but the Queen is the Queen, right? But she is definitely, like Nye said, more a figurehead. And let's not forget, she's in her 90s.
Right.
So she, you know, she's not, you know, the spry young person that she was 35, 40 years ago.
I think she's hanging on by sheer will of not wanting Charles to be king. I really think she's waiting for Charles to die before she dies. Which sounds terrible, but like, she don't trust that nigga a little
bit. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So a lot of things, you know, there's a huge, the Queen's the Queen, but there's a huge, you know, what they call the firm. There's a huge, basically, corporation around her, around them, I should say, that runs the day-to-day. It's not like every day she's like, ding, 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 let's do this.
Yeah,
it's
she
not
makes
like
no
that.
Real decisions.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, all these decisions were coming from, not really from her, because Meghan was clear to say in street terms, like, she fucks with me. Go ahead, bro. I was waiting for you to chime in, bro.
I don't know about that, and I will say this. Even though the Queen may not be making those decisions today, we are not going to pretend like she has not had her hand on the culture that has led what is happening to happen, right? Like, it would be disingenuous for us to absolve her of being a part of allowing that shit to fester, allowing those people to come. Because what it really tells me is that it's inconsequential to her. Right? Mm-hmm. Because even though at 90, she's not doing day to day, I'd be hard pressed to think that it's been that way for more than maybe the last 7 years, maybe 5 years. I totally believe she was fucking 80 years old in the meetings talking shit.
Right.
Yeah.
But I also think, I mean, listen, The Crown is a dramatization, so I'm not going to say this is complete reality, but I believe that there is some. A lot of truth based in the fact that, you know, when Elizabeth became queen, first of all, she was young and she was early in her marriage, right? And she thought she had time. She thought she had time to be married, be young, chill out before she assumed the crown. And because she didn't know her father was sick. Her father, who wasn't supposed to be king at all, like she wasn't even supposed to be in line for this shit. So she didn't even have time to train for this. It was because her father's brother abdicate the throne so he could marry some fucking divorcee, right?
Yeah, yeah. Queen Wallace Simpson.
Wallace Simpson from Baltimore.
So she wasn't trained for it. She felt thrown into it. And the queen mother, her grandmother, used to hit her in the head with like, you cannot, like, Elizabeth is dead. Queen Elizabeth is alive. Like, you are now the crown. All that individual shit,
over
it. Fuck all that, right? And I think that, and she was becoming queen at the beginning of the information age, TV, media, all that. So this is a line she's always had to walk her entire reign. And she's the longest sitting monarch of England ever. Mm-hmm. So I think that, like, for her, there's probably, I'm talking shit, but I'm imagining there is a sense of this is what it means to be part of this family. You gotta get rid of some of that individualistic shit. And I think that's why Charles frustrated her so much, because it was like, motherfucker, you are in direct line for the throne. Are you out of your mind? You know what I mean? Like, what is wrong with you? To her, it was just like, you have a duty to the crown. You have a duty to the Church of England. Do that. That is what you were born into, and you have to sacrifice all this other shit. But obviously, in a modern era, motherfuckers are like, nah, I'm trying to be out here and do some shit, because we don't even really do shit. You know what I'm saying? So I think for her, as outdated as the monarchy as a whole may be in concept, I'm imagining there's still this sense of like, you do your duty to the family. You do your duty to the crown. And I don't understand why it's not, why y'all don't get that.
I also found it fascinating to that point, like Megan was saying, like, she was down to do whatever duties, but like, nobody trained her. She just threw her in it, and she was like, yo, I don't know. I don't even know how to fucking curtsy. Like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Go ahead, bro. Go ahead, bro.
Just a quick question, because I didn't watch the interview, and okay. Not from some anti... I'm not watching this thing. It was I was watching Warrior, and that shit had my attention. was he asked how, because my question would be to him as a man, how did you explain what she was walking into, right? Because the duty of a husband is to be preemptively protective. Mm-hmm. It is a duty for you to understand your wife, to understand her weaknesses, maybe her flaws, some of the things that could be trigger points for her. Mm-hmm. And it is your duty to make sure that you are putting her in as few situations for her to be triggered as possible. And I think...
To answer your question, I think, well, she said herself that she walked in very blindly. She didn't Google him. She assumed, like everybody else who watches The Crown, that they were going to give her, like, some sort of education when she got there. Like, this is what you do. This is how this goes, blah, blah, blah. She didn't get any of that. And Harry, in his, you know, he assumed that she would be protected, that she would be, you know, she had a staff, that they would cater to her and give her what she needed.
Well, that's what I think is...
Let me just say this one thing.
And
she said that when she was, like, introduced to it, when it looked like, you know, they were serious and they was going down that path, like, people at the firm said, we got you. We're going to show you everything. We got you. Don't worry about it. And then when she got there, they just didn't.
Then when she got there, they took her passport, changed her name.
Yeah, they did. They take your passport and take your driver's license, so you can't leave. You're stuck.
Yeah. And Sean, she said she was asking senior people for help, like when she was drowning and really feeling depression coming on. She said she went to fucking human resources inside of Windsor, and that they were like, you'll be fine.
Yeah. I let me be clear. I don't want to make it seem like I'm being callous or dismissive.
It's not coming up like that.
It's difficult to explain because they said so much about that topic.
Because I just feel like, okay, like if we're in this dating process, right? Like at a minimum, hey, I'm going to take you to meet my grandma. It's not a regular, I'm going to take you to meet my grandma, right? Like there's so much protocol in doing the most basic of shit. That's the thing.
Like, she wasn't supposed to meet the grandma that day. Like, everything leading up to the engagement was kind of by accident. Like, they were done with a church service and they were going to be at this other cousin's house. And the grandma was like, I'll just stop by. Which is why she didn't know how to curtsy, which is, you know what I mean? Like, there wasn't a huge, she met his grandma. Like, she didn't meet the queen.
She didn't meet the queen. She met the grandma. Yeah.
I get it.
But I understand your point, like how does she not know?
Yeah, me? I get what you said.
A lot of people said that she not know.
No. How does she not know is not really my point.
Okay.
How was he knowing what has happened, having intimate knowledge of the viciousness of what they did to your mom? Like this is not, like, dude, we're not talking about some faraway person and, you know, oh, the nanny you know, was harmed or she was, right. you know.
Well, this, maybe there was just like a blind optimism there. Like
it was a blind, like, yes.
They this love maybe, me. Why wouldn't they love her?
This is a blind spot. And I think it's, I think what this is, this is a valuable lesson to people in understanding when you marry into family, right? Like you are not, for a lot of people, I get it. I'm grown. I don't be, you know, that shit sounds great. Okay. Yeah,
that ain't
until,
real.
Until you, and guess what? Until your fucking mother-in-law has a stroke and she got to come live with you.
Yep.
Yeah. You want to talk about that? Like you want to, like when shit get real. So that's all I'm saying. This is a great lesson in understanding what you're actually getting into when you're talking about a marriage. And good for him for obviously, you know, look, this is my family. And I'm sure it took a lot for him to let go of everything he's ever known.
I mean, they kind of forced it in a lot of ways. Yeah. What happened was obviously, you know, she got crazy and the media was going crazy on her because they had negative press pre-wedding and definitely post-wedding. Like it was nonstop,
like
death threats and all kinds of shit. And like I said, she had a miscarriage. Like she was depressed. It was really, really bad. So when they decided to leave and go to Toronto, to live, they were going to live in Toronto because Toronto's still kind of, I guess, technically an English. There's a connection.
It's still part of the Commonwealth.
Exactly. Yeah. It's still part of the Commonwealth. And they go to Toronto and they get to Toronto and they're like, yeah, you know that security shit? Nah, you good on that. No security for you. And Archie's born by then. So there's no security at all on Archie.
And at that point, they were still expected to do light duty as not as senior members. So they're like, we're supposed to do this light duty with security?
Show up in an Uber and just jump out the car and shit. And so... And they're living. They didn't say exactly, but it sounded like they were obviously living in a nice neighborhood. But it wasn't like they were living in a house that was like way away from everybody else. Like they had a house, and there's a,
you know, even like, when you live like even when you live in those apartments, even when you live in those neighborhoods, because people can do that. There is an extreme level of security that basically comes in and forwards you moving in.
Exactly, right?
They're reinforcing shit. They're double checking doors. They're going over building protocols. They're securing staircases, stairwells, all of that sort of shit.
Yeah,
so I totally get that.
And then they deaded Archie's title. It was like, you know, your son.
They weren't going to give him a title.
He's just going to be Archie.
Yeah, I saw that part, right?
And that's crazy because he's the only one that they were doing that to. Obviously, because you know, they're nervous about his lineage. So then they saw that in Toronto. It was like, well, this shit ain't going to work because we basically sitting ducks. And people like, people don't seem to even realize like, you know, kidnapping Archie or kidnapping one of them is like, yeah, that shit can happen. Like, and they could go to the Royals and ask for like $1 billion. Like it could get crazy. Yeah. It could get really crazy. So that's when they went to Cali and Tyler Perry held them. Oprah brought that up. They went to Tyler's house Tyler offered them.
I'm pretty sure Oprah brokered that too, because I don't imagine
she probably did. And Tyler also gave them full security.
Right.
He's like, you got the crib and you got some security, like for as long as you need it. Don't even worry about it. And so they chilled.
Are we definitely need at some point the Tyler Perry documentary of him being Forrest Gump. And all of these sort of pop culture phenomenons and shit. Words. Like, yeah, and we made it to that thing because Tyler Perry gave us his plane.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? It's like the weirdest shit.
Word. So Tyler held them down until they got where they live now. And Harry kept saying, you know, all I was worried about, because they actually
opened Harry was probably like, who is he? What the fuck?
They also asked him about the deal they did with Spotify, and was it Netflix as well?
And Netflix, but they said those things came after.
After, but he said, he was like, yo, we wasn't even really thinking about that shit, but a friend of ours was like, yo, you should go to the streamers and do something, because, you know, that's a way for you to make, like, substantial money and get yourself rolling. And so whoever that friend is, I think, brokered these deals, and he's like, he said, only reason I did these deals is because I just wanted enough money for security.
Mm-hmm.
He just kept talking about security. Like, I just need security for my family. I just need to have.
Because imagine there are some recognizable people in the world.
Absolutely,
and you're out here.
nigga be down at the Publix.
What? Yeah, like. ordering the chicken tenders sandwich.
Could you imagine your Uber shared Uber ride, and you pull up and this nigga just jumping
out? Hey yo, you wait 1 second, bro. I said, go in here. I'll be right back.
Hey, and I think it's notable that his thing was not so much like, okay, you're not gonna cover my wife security once we're no longer taking on royal duties. That's one thing. I am the fucking prince.
Yeah. You've been doing it all my life.
My father is gonna be the king.
My last name is fucking Windsor. Like, are you kidding me right now? You know what I'm saying? Like, I am in this bloodline. I am I'm a fucking member of the British royal family, and you are not going to give me are you fucking crazy right? Like, are you gonna say like you can't be serious? And I get that, right? Like, I don't think they did to Prince Edward either, but this is a completely different era. Like, Harry grew up under a
microscope.
In this shit. Social media, internet.
All that.
All this fucking shit. I can't imagine. Like, he ain't a random cousin. He ain't Fergie. Out in his
and it wasn't no reason. It was just like, he's just dead in that shit.
Because even if he's not performing royal duties officially anymore, he is still fucking Prince Harry. Like, what are you talking about? He might not be HRH. He might not have an HRH title, but he is Prince Harry. Yeah. Like,
sorry.
No, go ahead.
I do think it's also notable that he said he was surviving off of the money his mother left him.
Yeah.
Because he felt like she knew this was going to happen. She knew something along these lines that they would, you know. He would need this.
She's left with 25 M or something like that. Go ahead, bro.
Harkens to my point of why was he so oblivious,
like naive,
and having such a blind spot when you've had so many there are instance after instance where
you have
your mom is talking to you from the grave. Right. They're going to fuck you. They're going to.
I
you know what I'm saying?
Sean, I think Sean, because he wasn't directly in line for the crown, and because the queen has always kind of indulged Harry doing Harry shit, I think maybe he assumed that would carry over into his marriage, and Meghan wouldn't be under as fierce a microscope as his mom was. I think maybe he was blindsided. But I remember before they got, when they announced their engagement, I posted like, we got to be in prayer for Meghan that she's covered, because we know she's coming. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, so I'm actually.
And I don't think any of us foresaw it got this hard.
I'm not going to make it seem like I'm, you know, like I'm clairvoyant, but I definitely thought this shit was going to go left. Like, I definitely thought she was going to have hell to pay. There was no way that nigga from Brooklyn, thought that they was going to let this black woman, you know, saunter around when they gave that regular, they gave Diana hell.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
They really did.
You know what I'm saying? So in my mind, there was just no way that I thought that this was going to be, listen.
Yeah.
I didn't think that I didn't think it would end in this way at this point, but I definitely knew and felt in my heart of hearts that she was going through it in that process.
And I think they're even more upset with them because they left. Like, the nerve of you.
Oh, absolutely.
Nerve of you to not grin and bear it, right? Nerve of you to actually exercise your option to be out.
Which is why the security was the issue, right? The security was a long play. The security is
to make
not
you come
only,
back.
Not just for, it is to let you know, it is to show you just how vulnerable you are without us and without the protection of this shield and this family. Literally, the physical safety of, you can have 25 million. That don't necessarily mean that you're going to have the level of security and protocol. That you've had your whole life. So remember, a lot of these guards, these guys are people that are, these are probably former SAS guys.
Absolutely.
These are probably special services guys. They take a pride in their assets. And it's the same exact way we operate with Secret Service here, right? There's a pride in that shit. And so these guys, you know, they build relationships. And the guy that you've had for the last 6 years right, that's watched you meet her and go, you know, you go through that process and boom, he's gone.
He's gone. Just like that. You know, yeah.
And now you got somebody
else. Yeah, you got some, yeah. So, I mean,
while we're here, though, I do want to give a special fuck that nigga to Piers Morgan.
Absolutely. Well, it's actually going to be a cold war.
Oh, it's a duel. Oh, okay.
It's fuck that nigga Piers Morgan and fuck that nigga Sharon Osbourne, who was wilding.
Wait, what's Sharon saying?
Oh, my God. She was like, I'm 68 years old, and you're trying to tell me that because I'm friends with somebody that I'm racist too? I ain't no racist. So,
yo, what she did was she wild on Cheryl Underwood.
for Piers Morgan
mm-hmm. and saying that he was stating his opinion and he shouldn't be like canned for that.
But the thing is, he didn't. This is the thing.
You don't get an opinion if I'm suicidal.
He didn't get fired. He quit.
He walked off in the middle of a live broadcast, and this is why he should get fired. Why he should get fired is because of the revelation that he's been a big ass for all his time
since 2015.
He actually fucking was trying to date her ass, and she ghosted him and played him. That's what he should get fired for, because that shit is unprofessional as hell.
Exactly. Like, and again, he didn't get fired. He quit after that show that he walked off. He actually came back. To end
he came
the show.
Back, but so then, many people have written in.
Yeah, by then it was like,
yo, we don't want
because he's
here.
Been doing these Megan tirades, like Nia said, for 6 years, and they've only gotten worse and meaner and meaner and meaner to the point that the guy Alex Besser, I think it's Besser is his last name, who's the weatherman on their version.
Finally, like, he's like,
the weatherman?
He's the weatherman. He's the weatherman.
He was like, enough.
Yeah, enough, dude. Enough. Like, what the fuck, man? Every day, like, you rip this woman and, like, we have to sit here and listen to your bullshit. Like, yo, man, like, what the fuck? This whole racist thing came in. But Alex never called him a racist. He was just like, yo, man, like, enough. We know that she ghosted you. We know you mad about it. But, like, it doesn't give you the right to just destroy
it. And she said shit about you.
And since then, and he's like saying, I don't believe that she was depressed, and I don't believe she wanted to kill herself. I don't believe anything she said in the interview.
And like, also acted like they had never got a negative press. And he was like, you skipped from the engagement to the fucking wedding when you know that there was negative press all in between there, including you. Mm-hmm.
Including you. So, so Sharon Osbourne went at Cheryl Underwood, you know, basically saying, well, you prove it to me. Show me how I'm racist. And, you know, Cheryl, I don't want dog Cheryl, man. Damn it, I don't want dog. God
Cheryl
bless her.
Cheryl is not the one for a time such as this.
Cheryl's happy to be there. She never thought she would be there. And she ain't trying to fuck up her good job. And you know what? Go ahead, bro.
I don't necessarily know that that's the case.
Okay.
That's the case. I went to see her live, and she literally said, I'm never fucking up that CBS check. I'm not supposed to be there, so I'm grateful to have a seat.
Okay. Hey, niggas
she
got mortgages.
She literally weaved it all the way through her comedy act, and I was
niggas,
like,
"Niggas got
right.
mortgages. Niggas got mortgages.
Oh, for
niggas
sure.
Oh, yeah. Now I'm not dogging
Cheryl
her for
also ain't
for that
funny, so she's blessed to have that.
Yeah.